Good to see the great crowd here. I'm glad you're here this morning. We're going to be digging through history again in Genesis. So get over into Genesis. All right, just a couple of things right quick. I tell you, this has been one of those weeks. And I don't want to spend much time on our Supreme Court, but...
It's not so supreme.
There's a couple of things just to remind you. If, a year ago in May, we did a lesson called Same-Sex Marriage, a Biblical Response. So it's on the website, Seed on Good Soil here. So if you would like to go look again at how our Christian body should be seeing this matter, please do, because it is important. And as things progress, and I just have this feeling it's going to be a quick slide from here on out. And so it's a reference of how we should be looking at this biblically, knowing full well that, number one, we do not hate gay people. We harbor no animosity toward the individuals, but there are things that God said in His Word that when God says, they last forever. If God calls homosexuality a sin 3,500 years ago and He reiterates it 2,000 years ago, it is still a sin today. And the thing I want to remind us of that we need to focus on, because I've already heard some of the responses. One of the responses that came out of a Methodist minister out of Houston was, look, this is genetic. They're born that way. We need to get over that and just move on. And what I want you to remember is that if this is a scientific medical technology discovery in the year 2000 to 2013, then what we're saying is that God had limited vision, that we have surprised God, and that can't happen, folks. It's either what the Bible says is true and it's all true, or it's not and you don't need to come next week. There's no two ways about it. Okay? So what we're saying is if God has been overturned by our science, then we do not have God. God is eternal. He is all-knowing. Therefore, He cannot be surprised by something that happens 2,000 years after Christ. Okay? There's a lot of dialogue going on out there about that very fact of the genetic makeup. And again, when God calls something a sin, it has to be a sin forever. Okay? And that's what I want you to remember. Just a couple of things right quick, because I had to talk to a lawyer just to be sure I was looking at this right. I won't tell you who it was, but he had to use a baseball bat to hit me with. But I was seeing this as did the Supreme Court just overturn states' rights on this issue? And no, not yet. It's not yet. The states' rights still hold under the Defense of Marriage Act. The Defense of Marriage Act was not totally overturned, just one section of it. Okay. Now then, saying that, it's interesting to look at what happened with the Defense of Marriage Act, in that I think what they did was kick a couple of legs out from underneath the three-legged stool, because if they rule that gay couples who are legally married in one state can receive all federal benefits, okay, then the other part of the Defense of Marriage Act talks about a marriage of man and woman. Now, wait a minute. If you allow full federal benefits to gay couples, then what does that do to the rest of the act? So my feeling is that it's on its way out here pretty quick. Number two, states' rights still are holding, even though they upheld the overruling on the ban of California Proposition 8. Okay, so what happened was the majority of the citizens of California a couple of years ago voted for a ban on same-sex marriage, which everybody goes, California, really? They did that? Yeah, they did. A majority voted for a ban on same-sex marriage. A federal circuit court judge overturned that ban. Okay, so then that's why it went to the Supreme Court. All right, so the Supreme Court said that the people who brought that to the Supreme Court had no standing. So basically, the circuit court's judge, his ruling stood, which meant that the ban was overturned. All right, now then, so my question is, then the next state that comes to a vote and bans same-sex marriage, all they have to do is find a federal circuit court judge that overturns it, and the precedent is set. So, you know, both of these things just add up to a quick slide. I think it's going to happen fairly rapidly because there's going to be so many questions that come up. So I just want you to, you know, maybe refresh yourself on the biblical basis for, you know, our position on all this, because it's out of the Word and not our own individual interpretation. It's God's Word. So let's just kind of leave it at that. Yeah.
So there you are.
So that, and there's all sorts of studies and all sorts of things. She's talking about identical twins. One is gay, one is not. There are so many different studies going on. But the fact is, there is no scientific evidence that supports the genetic, you know, reason behind homosexuality. People think that that's happened, but it hasn't. There is no scientific evidence for that. The next thing that's going to hit really quick, and I've already read articles that say that they've been waiting on the Supreme Court decision so they can immediately act, and that's polygamy. That will happen next. And I mean, when you get down to that question, if the issue is, this was what the Supreme Court talked about, this was a lot of the discussions, why should we deny a person to love the person they want to love and their happiness in doing that? Well, I can use that for polygamy too. I can also use that for incest. I can use that for child marriage. I can use that argument right down the line. And since we have many Muslim nations that already practice polygamy, incest, and child marriage, well, you know, what's the problem with the United States? So, you step away from God's Word, and it's a rapid decline. So, something else, a couple of other things. Syria, they're now estimating over 100,000 dead. 2 million refugees are displaced. It continues to get worse and worse. It's fascinating to see all the behind the scenes, because Iran and Hezbollah, of course, are trying to help Bashar al-Assad's regime because they are Shiite. The Palestinians have been sending snipers in to fight against them. The United States is sending ammunition and things to the rebels. The rebels are aligned with al-Qaeda out of our... You talk about a mess. And it's just going to get worse. Then Egypt, I think you saw that the upheaval and chaos in Egypt is still not over. It will continue. It's going to keep coming back to the top. So they got a petition for 22 million people asking for Mohamed Morsi's resignation, the new president. These are the people that would prefer a more democratic form of government. The radical Muslim Brotherhood, the Mohamed Morsi people, they are fighting against. So it's just another mess. It's just another mess. Sounds sort of like a verse we read last week out of, you know, Genesis 16. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. It's the history of the Arab world. That's all there is to it. Okay, so last week we looked at the sacrifice of Isaac, that Abraham took his son Isaac up to be sacrificed on in the region of Moriah, in the Mount of Moriah, and this is going to continue to be important in our history. He took his son up there, and the angel of the Lord stayed his hand and gave him the covenant promise again from Abraham to Isaac. He has told him that his covenant is going to flow through him. Abraham asked God to please bless Ishmael. He has a son named Ishmael, and God says, I will bless Ishmael. He will be the father of many nations. He will be the father of 12 tribes. So he is going to bless Ishmael too. But there is no land involved in the covenant through Ishmael's line. There is land in the covenant that God is promising to Isaac and his descendants. That's part of the covenant that he is working through. So it says that Abraham left all that he owned to Isaac. He gave gifts to the sons of his concubine and sent them to the land of the east, meaning east of the Jordan River. And as we build on that today, you're going to continue to see that the descendants of Ishmael are on the Arabian Peninsula. That's where they wind up. Okay, so you continue to see that. Now then, just another interesting thing that I've discovered. The Muslims have the Quran for Holy Scripture and the Hadith. The Hadith is a collection of the deeds and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. Some Muslims do not hold the Hadith as high in scriptural authority as the Quran. Some of them do. Regardless of where they hold it, most of the Muslim clerics will answer some of the spiritual questions from the Quran by using supporting evidence from the Hadith. Okay? So they use the Hadith a lot because it's thousands of entries of the deeds and the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. Now then, how old was Abraham whenever he entered into the covenant of circumcision? Do you remember? Ninety-nine. Okay, so this was when God came to him and said, you know, and Ishmael was 13 at the time, and he said, here's the covenant sign that all males should be circumcised. Okay, 99. In the Hadith, for some reason, it says that Abraham was 80. There again, this is what we're going to see over and over and over, and then it starts to make sense. Whenever Muhammad is trying to get his new faith to be accepted by the Jews and the Christians, the Jews were very resistant to it because all of the stories of the Bible they weren't the same in the Quran. Muhammad was reciting these things that they were unaware. You know, the Jews were going, this doesn't match. It wasn't Ishmael that was taken up to be sacrificed, it was Isaac. And then you get into all the details. What do you mean Abraham was 80 years old? He was 99 years old. All of these things. So there's another difference, you know, that it just keeps popping up between the Muslim writings and what we have in our Bible. They don't match. And so the question is, if the same God revealed these things to Moses and to the apostles and to Muhammad, if the same God did that, why are there so many differences and errors in the Quran as compared to the Bible? Okay, so those questions come up. The other interesting thing was that in the Hadith it says Abraham was 80 years old when he was circumcised, and he was circumcised with an adze. You know what an adze is? Go look it up. A-D-Z-E. Anybody know what an adze is? It's kind of like an axe that, you know, with the blade turned sideways that you use to dig. And it's also that you can take a lot of wood off of a log with because, you know, dig. No wonder they've got a bad temper. You know? Okay, Genesis 25. I'm just going to keep bringing you these things out of the Quran and the Hadith just to compare side by side because you need to know these things. All right, Genesis 25. Isaac marries Rebekah. Rebekah has two sons, Jacob and Esau. Again, as was Isaac and Ishmael, the older brother becomes the servant of the younger. The younger is who inherits the blessing. God has done this twice in a row. It's almost like God is saying, look, I know what your customs are, but when I'm in charge, I can do what I want to do. And my covenant I'm going to choose to make with Abraham is going to flow through the son Isaac, and then on through Jacob and their descendants after them. So that's exactly what's happening. Jacob and Esau 25:21 says that Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. Their babies jostled each other within her and she said, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other and the older will serve the younger. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. So Esau was first. So in that culture, the older son should have been the one to inherit all the blessings and everything that comes through the father's inheritance. But it was Jacob who came out on the heel of Esau that he said, God said, the older will serve the younger. Esau becomes the nation of Edom. Edom is in Jordan, today's Jordan, Saudi Arabia. Jacob, of course, becomes the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. Genesis 26:1-6, it says that now there was a famine in the land besides the earlier famine of Abraham's time, and Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. The Lord appeared to Isaac and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land where I tell you to live. Stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and will give them all these lands. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees, and my laws. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. Here is the exact same covenant promise that God has given Abraham and now to Isaac. He's not changing. The covenant has to do with land, everlasting, many descendants, the father of many nations, and people will be blessed through you. The exact same things that God promised Abraham is now coming to Isaac because he is the covenant son. Isaac has Esau and Jacob. In Genesis 27, Jacob, through deception, And you'll just need to read it. There's so many details in this that I just can't cover. Jacob, through deception, receives Isaac's blessings, the fatherly blessings from Isaac. And it is through a deception that Jacob receives these. So it's interesting that the nation of Israel is born out of deception and struggling with God. We'll see that in just a minute. That's kind of an interesting thing, but it's important. So Jacob it receives the blessing from Isaac, 27:27. So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, ah, the smell of my son. He thinks he's blessing Esau, the oldest son. It's like the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed and those who bless you be blessed. Where does that come from? I will curse those who curse you. I will bless those who bless you. Where does that come from? God said that to Abraham very first. That was one of his promises to Abraham. So Abraham has given that to Isaac. Isaac is now giving that same blessing to Jacob. He doesn't know who it is, but that's what's happened. So the deception that's going on here is great. Then Genesis 28, 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. Remember, Haran is back up like in modern-day Syria. That's where Abraham's father and Abraham's family came up to. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I've promised to you. Here's the exact same promise from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. Land involved, blessings eternal through your descendants, so many descendants you won't be able to count. The exact same thing. God is consistent, and he is spreading his covenant promise just like he said. So Jacob is receiving that promise from God also. Now, if you want to really look into something, you know, this is Jacob's ladder here, you know, seeing the angels, this vision up and down the ladder. Go read John 1:51 and what Jesus tells Nathanael about this ladder. He says, you will see angels descending and ascending from heaven on the Son of Man. Jesus, 2,000 years after this moment, fulfills this vision. It's powerful. It's fascinating. Jesus becomes that connection between heaven and earth. And the only way that those messages and messengers can float between is through the Son of God, Son of Man, Jesus says. That's our connection. So, there you go. Go look 2,000 years later. All right, so the same promises are given. Genesis 32. Genesis 32, 22. It says, that night Jacob got up and took his two wives. Yes, there was polygamy going on. His two maidservants and 11 sons. And see, that's the thing. Digress here right quick. You know what? I could make a better argument for polygamy out of the Bible than I could same-sex marriage. But by the time the New Testament comes around, Jesus is saying marriage is between one man and one woman, so is all the other apostles. I just nerves. Okay, never mind. I had to get that. Let's start over. Genesis 32, 22. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. Israel, El is God. Israel struggles with. Your new name is Israel, struggles with God. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, and 4,000 years later, still to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. 4,000 years later, that's still intact. That's still going on. All right, so Jacob has a new name. This is the beginning of the name of Israel. Struggles with God. So it's interesting that Israel, the nation, was born in deception because of Jacob's deception with Isaac, and struggling with God. Israel. Now you would think, now any nation that does that, they don't deserve to be God's chosen people. Now do they? God's got different ideas. So he has made a promise, and he will continue to work with them just like he was working with them then and continues to work with them today. He has an everlasting covenant that he is going to keep. And God's going to do that. So Israel is born in deception and struggling with God. Genesis 35:9. We're going to continue. And like I said last week, you have to go through the details of Genesis, because the rest of history will not make any sense unless you get these basics in your mind. Okay, so now you see the covenant promise going from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. All of these things that are adding up through history. Once we get this down, you're going to be flying through centuries here in a little while, but you got to get this down first. Genesis 35:9 says, "After Jacob returned from Paddan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, 'Your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel.' So he named him Israel. And God said to him, 'I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will come from your body. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you. And I will give this land to your descendants after you.'" And how far does that go? How many descendants does he mean? As long as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have descendants, God is working with those descendants and his promise is good. "Then God went up from him at the place where he had talked with him. Jacob set up a stone pillar at the place where God had talked with him, and he poured out a drink offering on it. He poured oil on it. Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel, house of God. El, God, Bet, home, or house. House of God, Bethel." All right. Then the next thing is 35:23, that gives the sons of Jacob, who become the 12 tribes of Israel. That's 23 through 26. And then 28, I just want to see here. Isaac lived 180 years. Then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of years. And his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. So just like Isaac and Ishmael buried Abraham, Jacob and Esau bury Isaac. Okay? So You see the interplay between these two lines. Isaac and Ishmael, they came together, buried their dad. They were still in contact with each other. Jacob and Esau did the same thing with their father. So all of this is kind of all put in here together. So you see in Genesis 35, the sons of Jacob and the 12 tribes of Israel. That's where they begin. Then in Genesis 37. Here's another little key verse that you need to keep in mind. Again, there's so much detail that we're having to pass over, but then there's the whole story of Joseph. All the story of Joseph and how he made his brothers jealous with his dreams and everything that Joseph was going through, showing that somehow maybe he was more important than the other sons, and the other sons didn't like that, so they began to conspire and try to figure out how to get rid of Joseph. All right, so the brothers have taken Joseph and put him in this well, this pit, and Genesis 37:23 says, "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty, there was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead." Gilead is over in Jordan. So where are the Ishmaelites coming from? East of the Jordan River again. Where did Abraham send them? East of the Jordan River. Okay, so you get the picture. Already, they are nomadic peoples. And there's other things that prove that also. So already the Ishmaelites, the descendants of Ishmael, are nomadic people from the land of the east. They're coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianites, now wait a minute, they just said they were Ishmaelites. Now they're saying Midianites. Who's the Midianites? It says the merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites. What's going on? Do you know? If you look back into the sons of Keturah, Abraham remarried and he married Keturah. One of the sons that he had was Midian. Okay? And so remember, he gave all his gifts, everything that he owned, to Isaac, and gave gifts to all the other sons and sent them to the land of the east. So now you have Ishmaelites and you have Midianites, and evidently they're being used interchangeably. They are descendants of Hagar and Keturah, not Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah had one son, Isaac. That is who the covenant is going to flow through. All the others were sent to the land of the east. So now you have Midianites. Where else does Midian come up? Do you remember? Somebody very famous went into the land of Midian. Moses went into the land of Midian. That's where his father-in-law Jethro was from. Midian is in southern Saudi Arabia. All right. So now you have the Ishmaelites from Gilead, from east of the Jordan River. You have the Midianites, who are also from that line over in Saudi Arabia, and they're nomadic in nature. That's interesting. So here's this caravan. Now then, in verse 36, it says, "Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard." All right, so there's where Ishmaelites and Midianites, the other line, start showing up, and they continue to show up through history. And they're always east of the Jordan River. They're always nomadic in nature. That's going to be important later. All right, the other thing from the Quran, they have a whole chapter about Joseph in the Quran. And you talk about one messed up story. It doesn't make any sense. If you just read it by itself, you would not know what's going on. So many of the stories in the Quran, if you just read them by themselves, you would not know what is going on. It is only if you have the Bible in hand, can you answer some of the questions that come out of the Quran. Because the stories don't make sense. In Joseph, it says that Joseph is in the well by himself and a caravan comes by and takes him. The brothers are gone. There's no sale going on. There's nothing happening otherwise. It doesn't make sense. Joseph winds up in a well, the brothers leave, and a caravan comes by, picks him up, and takes him to Egypt. It's really bizarre. All right, so there's just another one that is interesting. Okay, everybody kind of on board so far? Because we're kind of going to take another little jump in history here. All right, Genesis 49. This is where Jacob gives a blessing to all his sons. Some of the blessings are beautiful. Some of them are kind of warnings about who they are and who they will become. So he is giving blessings to all his sons. Now then, this is somewhere still around 1900 to 2000 years before Christ. Okay. Now then, as he's blessing them, there's a couple that stand out, and one of them is Judah, the son Judah. Judah is supposedly where the term Jew first started being used. Okay, so it is through the 12 tribes of Israel, the son Judah, that people started calling all of these people Jews somewhere in history. So it's supposed that the son Judah, that word is where the word Jew comes from. And he has something really incredible to say here. He says, Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down, like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. Man, we could spend 2 or 3 weeks just on those verses right there. Because here it is, 2,000 years before Christ, and all of a sudden Jacob is talking about Judah with reference to a lion. And who do we know is the Lion of Judah? Jesus Christ, the Lion of Judah. Not L-I-N-E, but the L-I-O-N of Judah. The scepter will not depart from Judah until the one to whom it belongs comes. Think about this. 2,000 years before Christ, Jacob is saying, out of his 12 sons, one of them is going to have the power of rule. The symbol of the scepter is the king's rule. And he says, and that scepter is not going to depart from this line until the one to whom it really belongs appears. Now then, what's interesting is that in Psalm 2, 1,000 years after this, it refers to the Messiah ruling with an iron scepter. And then in the book of Revelation, it talks about Jesus, he is the ruler, and it talks 3 times about Jesus being the ruler with the iron scepter. Iron scepter is talking about judgment. So 2,000 years before Christ, Jacob is saying, through this line, judgment is going to occur. We know for a fact that the only one who can judge is God himself. That's why we believe Jesus is God, come in the flesh, and that he has been given authority to judge all the nations. And with the iron scepter, is that going to happen? So from 2,000 years before Christ to David in Psalm 2, 1,000 years before Christ, all the way through the book of Revelation to the end of time, we're talking about a certain ruler being the Messiah who is going to judge all nations with an iron scepter. That blows me away. That blows me away. Then, along with that, you start looking. What happened in the triumphal entry? What did Jesus come in on? He's talking about a donkey and a colt here, 2,000 years before Christ. In Revelation, it talks that Jesus is dressed in a white robe, except for one corner of that robe is dipped in what? Blood. A constant reminder of Jesus' blood that was shed on the cross. He's talking about this robe in the blood of grapes. There's so much symbolism. There's so much prophecy just in this one line. Why? Because Judah is the line of the Messiah. 2,000 years before Christ, God gave it to us. Now then, here's what this genealogy chart shows. We've had one chart that kind of went part way, now then here's the rest of the way. So from Noah, out of his son Shem, okay, came the Semites. The Semitical lines that we know today are the Jews and the Arabs. Because the Jews came out of the line of Isaac, the Arabs came out of the line of Ishmael, but they are both from the line of Shem. They are both Shemites, Semitics. All right? Out of Ishmael, God promised Ishmael to be blessed, and he will be the ruler of 12 tribes. Those 12 tribes became what we know today as some of the Arab nations. Isaac Out of Isaac came Esau, who became the Edomites over in modern-day Jordan, Saudi Arabia. Out of Isaac also came Jacob. Jacob becomes Israel. Out of him becomes 12 tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob blesses Judah. And out of the line of Judah comes this man named Jesse. Out of Jesse comes this man named King David. And we know that out of King David is the line of Jesus Christ. There it is, folks. Foretold in advance how it was going to be. Then whenever you read the genealogies in Matthew and Luke, it's all lines up right through history. There it is, right there. So as promised. Yes? Yes, sir? Yeah, the genealogies are a little different. One of them goes all the way back to Adam. The other one goes to Abraham through David. Yeah, because they're looking at both lines, mother and father. But if you follow, and it's kind of confusing, and it's tough to do the genealogy work. But when you figure it all out, it's all there. It's pretty powerful. The differences, but it's all there. It's full of it. Full of all this wonderful information. These two genealogy charts, I'll have those out on the website as a separate document, so that way you can print them or whatever you want to do. But they'll be included because they're very helpful. Now then, after, let's see, let's do one more. Exodus 23, because I want to at least get you to the promised land. Okay, Exodus 23. Now then, as God promised, he said that these descendants would be in a foreign land for four generations. So the Israelites, as we know, wound up in Egypt. They were not enslaved that entire time, but they became slaves for a few hundred of those years. And then, as we know, they were released to return, and Moses is taking them back to the promised land. But there's something here that I just want you to see. Exodus 23:20. It says, "See, I am sending an angel ahead of you to guard you along the way and to bring you to the place I have prepared. Pay attention to him and listen to what he says. Do not rebel against him. He will not forgive your rebellion, since my name is in him." Well, this is one powerful angel. Again, this is the angel of the Lord. Is this the pre-incarnate Christ? I think it is. All right? My name is in him. If you listen carefully to what he says and do all that I say, I will be an enemy to your enemies and will oppose those who oppose you. My angel will go ahead of you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and I will wipe them out. Remember in Genesis 15, he said, you're going to be gone for four generations because the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. Guess what? 430 years, it's time. And God says, I know where this culture is going. They will do nothing but get more and more evil. It is time to stop it. You know, that sounds horrible, harsh, and that's one of the biggest arguments. Why would God do that? Because God has seen the outcome of every civilization in history. He knows where these people are going. It's time to clean house. It just sounds terrible. Only God can do that. Do not bow down before their gods or worship them or follow their practices. You must demolish them and break their sacred stones to pieces. Worship the Lord your God, and his blessing will be on your food and water. I will take away sickness from among you, and none will miscarry or be barren in your land. I will give you a full life span. I will send my terror ahead of you and throw into confusion every nation you encounter. He's going to throw into confusion. Now, all I can do is read the headlines for today. Mm-hmm. But I'm going, you know what? There's a lot of people that they're not sure why they're fighting. They're just in there fighting. It's pretty interesting. I will make all your enemies turn their backs and run. I will send the hornet ahead of you to drive out the Hivites, Canaanites, and Hittites out of your way. But I will not drive them out in a single year, because the land would become desolate and the wild animals too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out before you until you have increased enough to take possession of the land. God is telling them, he says, I'm not going to give it to you all at once. You can't handle it. You haven't grown enough to make the land fruitful and multiply. So little by little, I'm going to do this until you're ready to take it. That's amazing. I will establish your borders from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines, the Mediterranean, and from the desert to the river way up north, the Tigris Euphrates. I will hand over to you the people who live in the land, and you will drive them out. Do not make a covenant with them or with their gods. Do not let them live in your land, or they will cause you to sin against me, because the worship of their gods will certainly be a snare to you. So before he brings him in, the Israelites in, God says, okay, Moses, here's what I want you to know. Here's what you need to know before I take you into this land that I've promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and all their descendants. It is amazing to see that. But over and over, he's talking about this special piece of land. God is attached to that land. He has some kind of a relationship with the land itself that comes up over and over in the Old Testament. Something about that piece of land is very special to God. Okay? Whenever he talks about if my people will turn to me, I will, what? Heal their land? Does that just mean a general nation land? I think there's more to it than that. So, as we make ourselves more like our enemies, is our land going to suffer? Makes you wonder. All right, any questions or comments? Next week we'll pick up with the move of the Israelites into the promised land. And then there's a couple of things that are coming up on the Jewish and the Muslim calendar here real soon that you need to know about. So we'll talk about those next week. Questions? Yes, ma'am? Yep.
You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works.
Yep.
That's what we're doing right now.
He says, you keep your, what she's talking about, that he will take care of the enemies. All I want you to do is focus on the Lord your God. Don't do what they're doing. Don't follow their ways. You keep your eyes on the Lord your God, and I'll take care of the rest. Yep. We're kind of in the same boat. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Almighty God, we thank you for your word. It is so exciting to look back and see what your word holds for us and see it being played out in history right in front of our eyes. God, we want to delve in. We want to see the wisdom that you have for us. We want your perspective on this world, not ours. We want to stand firm in your word. We want to stand firm in our faith, God, because it glorifies you. That is our heart's desire. God, I thank you for the people that are here today, and I thank you for this class, the impact that they have in the community and across the world. God, we want to please you in every way. In your Son's name, who makes it all possible, amen. Thank you all for being here.